and welcome back to the Lever Podcast. This is Tag 3, Episode 2, and it's my turn, finally.
It is your turn. Whee!
It wasn't really that long.
I feel like I'm always so nervous going into the Episode 2 recording of the layover, because I feel like this is the episode where, like, the most people are going to be listening to the layover for, like, the first time. You know what I mean? Like, because, like, so many people will sign up for Nebula off of episode one, presumably.
That's interesting.
And so I feel like there's a lot of pressure. We got to be, like, so funny and awesome.
Yeah, say something funny, Ben.
I don't know, Sam. That's too much pressure.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Ben, I feel like you've fallen off your classic bit that whenever someone asks you to say something funny, you have a great thing to say.
No, look. I got to think about it. Come back to me at the end of the podcast, okay?
Well, yeah. If you think of something, we can just fake it and put it here.
No. Just come back to me at the end of the podcast. I'll have something good for you.
Okay.
All right. Little insight into our recording schedule. As we record this episode, episode one will be releasing to the world.
That's true, in 24 minutes.
So we'll learn how much you hate it.
You know, at a minimum, people will be excited by how long it is.
Yeah, it is a long one. If anything, it makes this 34-minute episode seem short, which would normally be a plenty long one.
It's true.
But yeah, so we start, well, technically, I think we start just over the border into Italy. Because, yeah, the border, like, runs right on top of basically that train station, and I was a couple steps away. And I guess it's worth starting with kind of explaining myself a little bit, what I was trying to go back and forth about, and why I was almost going to go into the Slovenian train network but didn't. And the TLDR is that there were three different places I was looking at to confirm train schedules. One was the Eurail app. As we've mentioned, we use these Eurail passes, which get us unlimited travel on most European trains. But you do have to, like, add which train you're going on onto the app so that you can show a QR code when they ask for tickets. So you can look up trains on there. And there are times at which it can actually be a useful tool for looking up train schedules. The second place I was looking was Google Maps specifically. Google Maps is great because it will just show you one big departure board of every single train from a station. And that is, I think, the most definitive source that we've gotten for that. Apple Maps is also quite good, but the UI is just a little bit trickier because it will show you all the departures for a particular line. I've never seen a way to show just all the departures from a station, although I haven't tried that hard. So I think all of us kind of use a combination of those three.
It's true.
And the situation here was that each of the three sources was telling me different things about what the train schedule out of Nova Gorica was. And I think at first I was on Google Maps, and Google Maps showed me that I had this amazing move where it seemed at first that I could get a train all the way up to Vlach, which is basically like the border station of Austria. It's like where a lot of the trains from Italy and Slovenia kind of connect to the Austrian network.
Yeah.
I could connect through Slovenia up to Vlach on an itinerary that, like, Ben and Adam could not even come close to following, because I think it was like the next train on that route was not for like 3 hours or something. So it would have been like this massive coup. And I think if I had done that, you probably just would have done a different route. You would have tried to cut me off by going through Italy, right?
All the way around.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had done that, well, but obviously what's interesting about that move, of course, is that that is the wrong way for you. So you would have been able to do it, but then you would have had to make your way west. And I think probably what Ben and I would have done is basically what we end up deciding to do at the end of this episode anyway, which is that we would have gone around the other way. Mm-hmm. And in this case, we probably would have had to go all the way up to Innsbruck or something and try to cut you off there.
Yeah,
I mean, it's really tough. Because, like, those are the only two ways into Austria, and those are not near each other. Otherwise, it's just mountains.
Yeah.
Like, having to go all the way over there just to cut you off would have been, like, tough.
Yeah. And probably, honestly, what I would have done, knowing that, was, of course, it's easy to say this in retrospect, but I think having known that, knowing that y'all had a good cutoff option, but one that would take a lot of time, I probably would have focused more on challenges versus a real run, because I think that likely would have been the better strategy. But anyways, I actually still don't know what is the truth.
I think that the truth is that there was a train headed north that was incredibly delayed.
Yeah.
And that it would not have come in the time. Because Ben and I were waiting there for the full 45 minutes, and a new train headed north never showed up.
Yeah. Just anecdotally. Like, that station was a mess.
Yeah. I mean, that might mean that on schedule it might have worked, but in practice it wouldn't have worked. But the schedule showed additional trains headed north later that y'all could have got on. There were other little issues like this, especially in this zone. For example, there was one really long train that ran from Venice all the way to Vienna that on some sources, it showed it stopping in Udine. In others, it did not. And that makes a pretty big difference in terms of its accessibility to particular runners. But anyways, eventually I decide it's time to get on the Italian network. And the first place I head to is Udine.
You do head to Udine. I believe that that is correct, Sam.
Is that where you get off?
Yeah.
Yeah, you go to Udine and you connect in Udine. You transfer in Udine to, I want to say, Treviso.
Yes. I found the map. That is right. Yeah, this was all a blur. It's hard to remember the transfer stations, and obviously I didn't do anything in this zone, and we did a lot of different trains in this little zone, so it's all jumbled.
But in Udine, you kind of lay out your plan, your sort of strategy for this run.
Yeah, and it was, I think, tough for us to, like, fully paraphrase in this episode what my plan was. But basically, the first thing that I was focused on was the fact that we've learned time and time again how useful the rest period can be strategically. And I think the big instance of this that comes to mind was last season, the second night, when Ben, how much did your gap open? Do you remember?
It opened from like, I can't remember, but probably like 45 minutes to like an hour and a half or something like that.
I think it was even more than that.
Maybe it was even more than that. I don't know.
Yeah, on both directions. I think it was maybe you were only like 30 minutes ahead of us or something. And eventually we got it down to like 2 hours or maybe a little under 2 hours. But that was only through finding that weird little route that required us to take a taxi. At first, it was going to be like a 3 hour gap just based on the way that the rest period interacted with train schedules. So in this instance, I was trying to find some way of building a bigger gap through the rest period. And my answer for that ended up being Bassano del Grappa. I didn't feel like I had enough time to like fully explore the options because I had to commit relatively quickly in my trains to at least broadly that plan. But the deal basically was that by going to Bassano del Grappa, I could get almost 2 hours of guaranteed challenge time from an initial 45-minute gap, just based on rest periods and all that. And even that, I believe, was assuming that y'all would take a taxi on one connection. Of course, impossible for me to have necessarily evaluated all options, but based on my research, I believe I was going to get there at like 6:45-ish p.m., and I was going to have until 6:20-ish a.m., and that was with the rest period, that's almost 2 hours of guaranteed time. So pretty good.
Yes.
I mean, Sam, I will say you had a very strong option to widen the gap further, which we discover and freak out about, but you didn't take it.
Well, yes, but I never would have had the budget. Or, I mean, unless I had gotten really lucky.
Well, you definitely would have had the budget if you hadn't gotten absolutely bodied by the puzzle box.
I guess it's like possible I could have gotten the budget. But the reason why I never even researched that option was that at this time, I never really was even considering going up to Trento.
Well, but why not?
Because, I mean, as we've explained a bunch of times this season, there's only very few options through the Alps that sort of take you from below the Alps to in the Alps slash north of the Alps. And you basically have to get on the other side, on the north side of the Alps, to get on the east-west lines that start to take me specifically towards Geneva, or in Adam's case, towards Vienna. And one of those was what we mentioned a little bit earlier, the route to Villach. One of those is this route from Bassano del Grappa to Trento. And then there's another route up to Trento from Verona. But the Bassano del Grappa to Trento route, that's like a super like regional train. It takes 2 hours to make it from Bassano del Grappa to Trento, despite being physically closer than Verona to Trento, but the train from Verona to Trento is basically just an hour. So having seen that initially, I knew that like it never really made sense for me to go to the Bassano del Grappa to Trento route, because not only would I be paying a lot for that train for relatively little physical movement, but also you always have this option very quickly of going from Verona to Trento.
But that wasn't true in this instance. In this specific instance, because of the way these specific trains worked out, you had a route to get to Trento way before we could have through Verona.
I could have gotten there earlier, but y'all could have closed the gap. And with the fact that I would have never had challenge time, I would have had to just wait in Trento for quite a while to gain the budget to move further.
Kind of. I mean, it was more, we wouldn't have really closed the gap at all. We would have been more behind you than we would have been anyway. Because the thing about this route was that it used the rest period the most efficiently of any route that like we've just about ever seen.
Right.
Which was that you could take this train straight through right before the rest period, and then you could get on a train almost immediately in the morning, which would have gotten you to Trento way before we could have, because our rest periods worked out terribly with us getting stuck in Vicenza, not able to get to Verona that night, and then having to then take a much later train from Verona up.
Uh-huh. I mean, as I said, the truth is, like, I never really researched that route north. And that's, again, because, like, it just never seemed like a very advantageous Alps crossing to me. Because even beyond the Trento of it all, it still leaves a really good cutoff option by y'all making it very quickly to Milan, where there are some great crossings. Whereas from Trento, you have to go up to Innsbruck, which takes a while, is expensive. And then from there, you still have to go west. And that takes way longer than it would take to go via Milan. So basically, like, all in all, I never really intended to cross the Alps via Trento. And what I had intended, what was the plan, which I talk about a little bit here, was that I was sort of calibrating based on y'all just trying to arrive in Bassano del Grappa as fast as you could, because I assumed that y'all would identify that you could get there in the morning before I could get out, which I believe was the case. Actually, no, I guess that wasn't the case. I think it was that you could get there slightly after I would have gotten there or something like that. But anyways, based on how the schedules worked out, I assumed that y'all would assume I was taking the train north to Trento and therefore waiting around in the morning until 7:20. With that assumption, I assumed that y'all would just follow directly behind and try to get to Bassano del Grappa as soon as possible. And if y'all had done that, you would have overnighted in, I believe, Castelfranco Veneto. I think that was your furthest.
I think it wasn't actually Castelfranco. I think it was...
It was like Castello di Godego or something like that. Close.
It was close to Castelfranco.
Yeah, something around there. Like quite close, but not quite there.
I think it was Cittadella, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Or no, it was Campo San Piero, I think, actually.
Well, wherever it was, there was some sort of move that I could do where even if y'all had taken a taxi, I could basically go down to Vicenza and start to build a gap again and basically get physically in front of you, which, as we know, is like the thing, and also get onto some train schedules where you start to have those train connections where you do get challenge time. So basically, my strategy was like fully centered on let's build challenge time, because with how physically far I was from the destination at this point, it seemed unlikely that at least would require a lot of luck to make it all the way there. So a little bit more calibrated for challenges versus physical progress. But anyways, it's hard to remember all the details, but I think that is the loose overview of what my plan was.
But then the puzzle box.
Y'all don't want to talk about your side at all?
Oh, sorry. I just meant that that was your plan and then the puzzle box sort of got in the way.
Oh, fair. Yeah.
I mean, our plan was not that interesting. We were mostly just following behind you. And then how would you characterize our slight fuck up here? Were we overthinking it?
No, Ben. I don't think we were.
Okay, we weren't.
Because here's what I would say. If you are us, you are the chasers. And then Sam takes a kind of strange route. And then you identify that there is a route that he could take. You don't know how many coins he has, but like you assume he has made the normal amount of coins that he would make in the challenge time that he has had. He could take an incredible route all the way up to Trento. You have to assume he will do that because historically, Sam is very good at identifying optimal routes, usually better than we are, and then using that to his advantage, right? So without knowing that he had gotten absolutely bodied by Amy's puzzle box, there was just no reason to believe that he would not do that.
This is some advanced layover podcast copium. Copium through compliments.
Look, I think we all know that feeling, because we've all felt it before in Jet Lag the Game, of like, you don't know what's going on, you don't know what's going on, you don't know what's going on, and then you see something in Google Maps and you go, oh, and you feel like it all clicks. And I think we all perhaps have a bit of a bias towards that click, but that was definitely the feeling of like, oh, we finally have figured out what Sam is doing.
Right.
It's gotta be because there is this weird random train, a train unlike any train I have ever seen.
Yeah.
From pre-Milano in the morning that only goes from pre-Milano only one time a day.
Once a day.
To Trento. It was outrageous.
Yeah, we do see a lot of confirmation bias on this show because it's very easy to pattern recognize your way to believing that this is 100% the truth.
It was too perfect.
Well, I think that it's like, I feel like when you're the chaser, you have to assume worst case scenario most of the time.
You do.
Right? Because like, you've got to take the more risk averse position generally, I feel like.
I think it is certainly the truth that on day one, you want to be risk averse.
Yes.
Because we've seen what can happen on day one.
Yes.
Last season. And therefore, like, as the game progresses, I think you need to probably be more aggressive as chasers because you can't just kind of cede territory permanently. Eventually, you have to go for it. Eventually, you kind of have to close in on the runner. But yeah, on day one, it makes sense to be a little bit more risk averse because like,
yeah,
in truth, like I was still in your zone the entire run, maybe?
What I would say is that like, I agree, like on day one, as chasers, your job is mainly to prevent worst case scenario, right?
Yeah.
Like, as long as you prevent worst case scenario, you're doing your job. And in our minds, we were like, well, Sam doing this is worst case scenario, so we have to assume that he's doing it so that we can try to prevent it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. I'll give you a little bit of credit.
I would say our mistake was that we believed in you too much, Sam.
Yep.
We had too much confidence in you.
Yeah, you keep saying this in the show. It's very manipulative language. Just because I didn't do the plan that you wanted me to do does not mean that it was not a good plan.
We just shouldn't have believed in you as much as we did.
A classic foible. We thought Sam was a genius, but he just didn't have the juice.
Y'all are really into like emotional manipulation this season.
Well, part of the strategy.
Sure. But it's like emotional manipulation of the audience.
Talk about the puzzle box.
Oh, you want to move on? You don't want to get called out on that?
Talk okay. about the puzzle box.
Let's talk yeah. about the puzzle box.
Wait. No, actually, no. Here, let's address this once and for all. Do you actually think, is your argument actually that it was stupid for us to have believed that you would do a route that was extremely advantageous to you? You think that was dumb for us to do?
No, I just gave you credit. But what I've been articulating is like, I don't think that that's as advantageous as you are portraying it as.
I don't know. I mean, I guess your argument is just that that route north is just isn't very good at all for you. So the idea of you getting far on it, you don't care about.
Yeah.
Sam, I think this is copium on your side. I think you didn't identify this route.
I agree. I think this is huge Sam
copium.
And
you're just saying like, oh, it wasn't that good. Sam, this route was bonkers.
Oh, no,
good.
This route was stupid anyway. I didn't even want to take it.
As I said, it's a great route. If this was day three, that would have been a great route. It's not day three. It's day one. day one is more about budgets.
You should have taken this route.
And that is a terrible route if you are focused on just building challenge time and all that.
Oh my
God. Not terrible. That's overselling it. But it's not the role that I was looking for with a route.
I would just argue that it's not necessarily smart gameplay to assume that you just want to build budget in your first run, because as we saw last season of Tag, the second runner did not get a second run. So to just make the assumption that your first run should be all about budget is a pretty bold assumption.
You can argue that all you want. Look, I have a strategy, you have a strategy. Just because I was following a different strategy that therefore focused on different routes does not mean that the route is wrong. You can argue that my strategy is wrong, but within a different strategy, different routes have different roles.
Well, I would also argue that you would have had a lot of time in Trento to do challenges, but that's beside the point.
I would argue this as well.
That's true. Like, again, I don't think it's a terrible route. And again, like, I don't think it would have been a terrible mistake to take that route. But I was more explaining why I didn't even really put much research into that connection overall, because my entire strategy was based on making y'all think I was doing that route and doing misdirection, which worked.
Well, what you've said is that your whole strategy was based around you maximizing challenge time. So let's talk about how you used the challenge time.
You pulled Amy's Puzzle Box, a challenge that we have had in like every season for like 5 seasons.
Yeah, I actually found another one recently. I'll go grab it.
Oh, you found the... We have 3 puzzle boxes. Amy has been very mad that we never used them because they didn't come up. But finally... These stupid things have been on our backpacks for, like, nearly a year.
I'll shake it for the audio-only podcast.
That's good audio. Oh, that's good. Shake the puzzle. Yeah, I like that.
This one's yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and it only has 1 QR code. I guess this is a V1. I guess the Rickrolls were added later.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wonder if that one's different.
Maybe.
Because that's old. She has to change them, I guess.
Here, I'll scan the QR code. Well, it's the same tweets, so let's see.
Mm-hmm.
4, 1, 2.
Is there the same stuff in there, though, I guess is the question.
Yeah.
Probably.
I've never opened this. Yep. Puzzle, bing bong box, quarter.
Okay, yeah.
Well, the great news is I scammed a quarter out of Amy.
Yeah, well, it is tough, the journey these puzzle boxes have gone on. Because every season, Amy's like, I need to, like, do a few things to make sure the puzzle boxes all still work, which I think is, like, adjusting, like, the QR codes or whatever. So we have had to, like, give her the puzzle boxes. She, like, fixes them up, and then she gives them back, and then we don't use them. There was one time when it was a really tight timeline, and, like, Amy, like, brought the puzzle boxes to, like, this party we were both going to be at so she could hand them off to me before we went on our trip, and, like, then they never come up.
Yeah, so to start my copium, honestly, there's not a lot of copium. I'll start by saying... I'm just really not good at puzzles. I've never been good at puzzles. Mm. I suck at puzzles. It's a weak point. So I do recognize that just fundamentally my performance on this challenge was quite poor. The next thing I'll say is that it was a long day. And I think especially like the end of day one is the most tiring moment of the entire season. Because like the end of day two, you could be like, oh, tomorrow's it. I can kind of go all out. But at the end of day one, especially with how day one went, with just like a lot of short trains, not a lot of downtime and all that, I was cooked. So my mental capacity was not really there.
I will say your brain, I don't mean yours specifically, Sam, I mean one's brain. It just does not work as good when you are in the middle of doing this, especially when it's late in the evening.
I think this kind of like abstract thinking is very difficult while playing these games. Like, I think that you're sort of locked into a very particular kind of like spatial, logical thinking that does not square well with like doing word puzzles.
Yeah, yeah. Especially the way that this puzzle box in particular was designed. Like, it was sort of designed around like lateral thinking. And that was just not like the frame of mind with which I was approaching this with. Mm. So like, yeah, anyway. Yeah, the tweets thing, to be honest, I should have gotten that. Cause like I was on the right track. Like it was obvious that there was like some sort of pattern of numbers within there and that was a common thing. That I fully attribute to just limited mental capacity at the time. That was totally something I should have gotten.
Here's one thing I'll say in your defense. I actually will say this in your defense. That tweet thing, and I don't mean to call out our colleague Amy, who did a very good job on the puzzle box, but that tweet thing is slightly flawed in that there is also the word four in the second tweet when it's supposed to be one.
Mm. Call her out.
Yeah, we could have figured that out.
Call her out.
What I will call Amy out is the fact that her challenges have been consistently my nightmare.
Well, it's very funny that they started as like a huge coup when people got them, and then she like got mad at us and made them way harder, and now they're impossible.
I don't think we've seen y'all pull an Amy challenge in quite a while now, right?
No, I think is the last Amy challenge that one of us did. I mean, I did the first ever Amy's Trivia Corner in Tag 2.
I've never done an Amy challenge.
Right, but like in Australia, we did two of them.
Yep.
In both instances, we actually managed to succeed, but like just barely.
Barely. Yeah, barely. Barely. Well, Ben and I would have failed both of those.
We did do one Amy challenge, which was the dance, the TikTok dance, which was...
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. We did the Amy's TikTok dance. That was a good one. That was hard.
I would have failed that.
Yeah, that one was fairly challenging.
Anyways, but yeah, this, at least for me, was another instance of that. Because the other thing was like, I thought that there'd be like two, maybe three steps.
Sure.
There were like eight.
Well, you know, the trouble is that Amy is just a very clever lady. And mm-hmm. so...
It was a very well designed... I mean, imagine if we designed every challenge with that level of detail. This show could be pretty good.
I know.
We would need more Amy's.
Yeah. Anyways, so massive respect for the design on this, even if it was a nightmare. And if anything, like, I'm kind of jumping ahead, but like, I feel like part of it was like, I did not expect that Amy would set up a telephone hotline for a challenge.
Sure, you underestimated her.
Yeah, therefore the idea of calling a phone number from a foreign country to complete a challenge was quite something.
Well, I do have a question for you, which is that, I mean, obviously what happened to you is, I think the biggest copium that you are allowed to present, Sam, is like the puzzle piece ended up in your pocket, which obviously is mm-hmm. like, you know, annoying and you probably should have checked your pockets, but like is an understandable mistake to make. Like you just didn't realize it was there.
Yeah.
I guess the question for you is, do you think that if you had had the extra puzzle piece and can put the puzzle together correctly, which surely you would have with the extra piece, would you have figured out that it was a phone number?
Oh, like with that nine sequence of numbers?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I think probably.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't think that was the part that would have been the trickiest.
What do you think it would have been?
Well, it's hard to say since Amy just gave me the answer, was the whole like, you went to the hotline and the thing that kept tripping me up is like the lack of inputs.
Sure.
The lack of places to put information. And in that instance, you had to make the connection of the word season mm-hmm. and the need to put the season number of tag in. I think that would have been my trickiest bit.
Well, the season number of Capture the Flag.
Oh, sorry. Capture the Flag. Weird, yeah. Yeah. I think that would have been the trickiest bit. So like, I don't know, to be honest, if I had not had the puzzle piece gone, if I would have completed this, what I am sure of is I probably would have recognized at a certain point that especially given the fact that I took the hint that it was just not worth my time and I should have just vetoed it.
Yeah.
Or I probably would have vetoed it because I would have recognized that I was just killing too much time on it. But yeah, to explain the lost puzzle piece, like in my mind, I had nine puzzle pieces, which made a perfect square.
Right.
So like,
right.
It just like felt right. And of course, like one of them didn't fit, but my thinking was, okay, well, that's a red herring. It's supposed to be a perfect square because that's kind of intuitive. But then there's the red herring one just to fuck you up because that seems like something that Amy would do.
And in fairness to you, I have to say, it does absolutely feel like something that Amy would do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason I knew that was because like we did the getaway.
Yeah. Well, in the getaway, we had decoy puzzle pieces.
Yeah. And we filmed this like a month after the getaway or something. And so it was top of my mind. We did a puzzle challenge that Amy was involved in designing in the getaway. And we had red herring pieces. So it was like, oh, of course, Amy's going to throw in an extra one here. And she actually did this probably over a year ago when she initially made this. So that's why in my mind, I didn't even think twice about the fact that I might be missing a piece. But yeah, anyway, it was a challenging one. And I think in retrospect, knowing how bad I am at puzzles, like if I had known how many steps were involved, which of course I didn't, I think
just immediately veto.
Yeah. Because I think in any world, it would have taken me plenty more than 30 minutes to figure out.
Well, also, this challenge should have been worth more coins. Because we were like, Amy, we don't know how involved this challenge is or what it would take. But, like, you get to set the value for it based on how long you think it'll take. And she was like, oh, yeah, you can do this in, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah, she was like, this will take, like, 15 minutes.
Whatever the lowest value challenge is, just give it that. And we were like, okay.
And sure, you could.
No.
Well, in fairness to Amy, she had tested the puzzle box on people, and that was how long it had taken them on average.
Yeah, I think either she has very smart friends, or we underestimate the mental detriment of being in the middle of Jet Lag the Game.
Yeah, I think it's some of column A, some of column B.
Yeah. But yeah, that was probably one of my worst challenge performances ever.
I mean, it's easy for an outside person to watch and then find out the answer and be like, well, I would have figured it out. But honestly, like, in fairness to you, it was a difficult puzzle box. Like, I don't know how confident I am that in the frazzled headspace of jet lag that I would have done all that well at it.
Yeah.
But you know what, Sam? Then you pull another challenge.
Yeah. So as we talked about both on screen and in a prior Layer Over episode, we really tried to dissuade the use of double ups this season.
Yeah, our assessment had been that they were too powerful.
Yeah. And the way that we did this, just to go in a little more detail to what we said, is like we actively made challenges more difficult, and particularly with a higher likelihood of failure this season.
Yeah.
We never really designed challenges in Tag in the past to be ones that, like, you genuinely might not be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly instances where that's come up, but we never, like, intended for that in design. We certainly did not, like, design challenges this season where, like, straight up, we just don't think that this is possible. But we certainly added more in the mix where it's, like, it might not be, or at the very least, it just might take more time than is worth it. Do you have a good example of that?
I'm trying to think of ones that aren't spoilers, because, like, I'm thinking of ones that come up later.
Right. Well, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be one that's already come up. Let me look at the list.
Because I would say, like, but it is important to clarify, like, our goal was not to make it so that it, on average, took more time to earn the same amount of coins as before. It was just that there was more likelihood that you would fail at one point in your attempt to complete things.
Yeah, so one good example of this is guesstimate a kilometer.
Yes, yeah, the first challenge, totally.
So obviously Adam succeeds at this.
And I get a lot of coins quite quickly, 1,000.
Yeah, but there's quite a high likelihood, especially if you don't have the rhythm of Mr. Adam Chase, that you fail this challenge and therefore you incur a 30-minute veto. So our logic was that if you have a deck of challenges where you do have challenges like this, you have a higher likelihood of ones that you just attempt and fail, and you have a higher veto penalty. We changed it from 30 minutes to 90 or 60.
No. So it used to be that your veto was doubled.
Oh.
So it would be an hour.
Oh, right.
But now it would be 90 minutes. And there's a big difference between an hour and 90 minutes, because, like, in this game, like, it's not that unusual to be ahead by an hour or a little more than an hour. So, like, with an hour veto, you could maybe get out of somewhere. An hour and a half is a very rare lead to have, to be more than an hour and a half ahead.
Well, just because, like, in most places, there are trains on an hourly cadence. Like, that is a pretty common thing.
Yeah.
And so the chance that you get caught being in a 90-minute freeze versus an hour freeze is way higher than just, like, 50% more.
Yeah, so what we've seen so far is what we expected, whereas last season, we kind of started to pull double-ups almost all the time because we didn't have very failable challenges and because the cost was so low, both in terms of the actual cost of it and the veto cost. This season, we never really see it bought until now, because as we expected, it sort of turns into the Hail Mary option. And, you know, I woke up that morning and I expected y'all to be there within 20 minutes. If y'all had followed straight behind, I think it was about 6:20 or so when you were going to arrive. So my thinking was, like, maybe I can get lucky and eke out, you know, a quick challenge or at least run away from the station and get a challenge done. So, you know, might as well. I was like quite confident that I was going to get caught, even if not within 20 minutes, within like an hour or so. And I didn't really have any intentions of even getting on any other trains because my budget was so low and might as well save that for a second run. So I pull it. Well, rather, I buy it. I pull the challenge. And do you think the audience is going to be able to figure out what the challenge is?
Zoom in on those pixels? Maybe.
It's kind of small.
It's small.
Is it readable? Let me see.
At least you can see cursed, which tells you a lot.
That's true. You can see that. It's a curse.
How about let's save the rest of the discussion for episode 3 yes. of the Layover Podcast. A little podcast cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Well, that's how the show works, at least. We mostly start next episode with this stuff. Anyway, so any last words?
Oh, I figured out the funny thing that I can say.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Bing bong.
Good.
Pretty good.
Thank you, Ben Doyle. Thank you, Adam Chase. Lots to discuss next episode. So we'll see you there.
Bye.
Bye.